The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 309 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week for another scintillating edition of the podcast, the J-Man, Jason Linden. How are you, Jay?
I'm great, and it is always scintillating when I'm on, isn't it, Chadwick?
It is. Y'all get my new nickname for you? The J-Man?
Sure, I can roll with it.
It's better than what your students call you.
let's not get into that. I want to keep my job.
I agree. All right, so anyway, we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Reds here, and not a ton of news to discuss, but we do have something fun planned here, I think, as we continue on with the podcast. But let's begin with what little news was in the week that was. First of all, we talked last week about Pedro Strop, and it's now official. The Reds put ink to the contract. Pedro Strop, a one-year deal worth $1.825 million. It seemed to me like a pretty good low-risk, high-reward. Like, well, low-risk, you know, $1.8 million. It's a lot of beans.
Don't you wish that you could or to risk a $1.8 million chance.
Yeah, really. It seems like a reasonable bounce-back type candidate because he's been really good in the past. You know, I always say hope's not a strategy, and it's certainly not. And I guess you kind of are hoping a little bit here that he's okay. If he's not, well, they're out $1.8 million, but it's just a one-year deal. So I'm good with it, and I'm eager to find out what Jason Linden's opinion is on Pedro Strop.
I think it's great. I think it's a great signing. Everything I've seen is that, you know, he didn't have the kind of injuries last year that are we are officially concerned about the future of his career. It seemed to be just one of those injuries, one of those years that guys have sometimes where they get a couple little things and nothing seems to be career hindering. So I love it as a move. I think it's an excellent, like you said, low risk signing that helps really give somebody, the bullpen is perhaps the one spot on the team that isn't overflowing with established talent. And so it's nice to have somebody who's a little bit established to drop in there.
Are you like me? I feel myself every time we talk about pitchers, I kind of give them a Derek Johnson boost a little bit, you know, a little ratings boost on their MLB The Show rating because of Derek Johnson being there. I don't know. I just think, well, okay, if the guy has anything left in him, maybe our guy DJ will get it out of him.
I quit thinking that. Talent. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I don't know, but anyway, now that's interesting. We talked about that some last week, the Strop deal. But what's really, I think, a more interesting topic of conversation right now, and we do have a question about it later. But I want to talk about the two guys that, well, before we talk about the two guys that have lost their spots on the 40-man roster, I want to get your opinion on Nick Castellanos because again, we've talked about him here, but I've not talked to you about Castellanos. We talked about him certainly before he was actually signed. What are your thoughts on him and how he fits into this 2020 Reds team?
I'm happy with it. I'm happy with the signing, you know, especially given what was on the market. As he got signed and I kind of was digging into it, the one thing that stood out to me is that he has this reputation of being like a defensive, just a butcher in the outfield, right?
Yes.
But, you know, the more I looked at it, and I didn't realize this because I just don't track the American League as closely as I track the National League, but 2018 was his first year in the outfield. And he was terrible. And then last year, he was, I don't know, fine. Like, not a disaster. Not great, but not a disaster either in the outfield. So I think that maybe people are, I don't want to say underrating his defense because he's unlikely to be good, but perhaps being a little bit harder on him than he deserves defensively. And it's a good signing, and it's another bat. My goodness, there should be platoons flying all over the place in the outfield this year.
Yeah, it's a lot of good options for manager David Bell. And so I'm really eager to see how that plays out and where the at-bats go and how things are are divvied up. Now, to sign Castellanos and Pedro Strop, the Reds had to make room on their 40-man roster. And to do that, they designated a couple of players for assignment. The first was Jose Siri, outfielder Jose Siri. He was ultimately claimed by the Seattle Mariners. And Sal Romano was designated for assignment as well, and has not been waived at the time we are recording this, but I would not be surprised if Sal Romano were claimed by someone else. So Sal Romano, Jose Siri, are you losing sleep over losing either of those guys?
More so Sal than Siri. You know, it's funny to me. I don't know. It's Jose Siri is, it's weird because I feel like that there's probably a solid overlap of the Venn diagram of people who think that Aristides Aquino should not be on the roster / still needs to prove himself, and people who are real mad that Jose Siri is gone. I feel like there's some overlap there. Good and move. That's got the silliest overlap in the world. I mean, Jose Siri he was fine. He had a couple of decent campaigns, but boy, I mean, if you got issues with Aquino's peripherals,
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Siri's a toolsy guy, you know, and one of these is projectable, maybe. And he had some success, certainly, some raw power. But to really to explain what my reasoning is for why I don't, on Siri specific, we'll talk about Romano in just one moment, why I don't really have a problem with Siri being cut, is this. It's a question that comes from our patreon.com/redlegradio from Steven Offenbaker. And yes, it's safe for you to ask a question this week, Steven. And his question was this. With Romano and Siri being designated for assignment, I keep hearing having too many good players is a great problem to have. I see this more as a final purge of the failed Walt Jocketty-led rebuild. The question I have is, do you foresee having to give away any more once prospect players for free, or is the purge complete? Now, we'll talk about that in a moment, but his follow-up is thoughts on why they designated for assignment Romano and Siri but kept Scott Schebler. And that's what I want. My point was guys like Scott Schebler and Mark Payton, they kept those guys instead of Jose Siri when they made the decision to or were able to sign Nick Castellanos, had to make the decision on who to remove from the roster. And my opinion is, which of those guys is more likely to be a good bench bat if you have to call somebody up in 2020? I mean, I think it's Schebler, clearly. He's performed. Yeah.
No doubt.
Right. So 2020, 2021, you know, Scott Schebler is a guy that can help the team if you have to have him. Siri, maybe, you know, you know, I prefer to keep the guy that can provide some depth and can, if you bring him up, he's probably not going to kill you in a backup role. So that's my thoughts on that.
I would agree with that entirely. And, you know, I think there are several things with Scott Schebler. You know, for one, it's still, I mean, spring training hasn't started yet, and you always want to come in with a few more guys than you need because stuff happens. And it's possible for one or two things to happen, and all of a sudden Scott Schebler is, you know, maybe the last man on the bench. Right. If that doesn't happen, he'll have to be, you know, he'll have to be DFA'd too. He doesn't have any options left. But, you know, he's – and also, I mean, I saw somebody on Twitter say something about maybe showing other teams that he's healthy and work some sort of small-time trade. And, you know, that's a possibility as well. What it comes down to, frankly, though, is that Siri has ways to go, and he's already in his – you know, he's mid-20s. He's 24 now. This will be his age 25 season. No, I'm sorry. It'll just barely be his age 24 season. Anyway – he's got a ways to go before anyone believes that he is ready for the major leagues. Whereas Schebler, I think everybody understands that he has a potential use in the major leagues. So, and this is a team that's here to win now. And I mean, what was Siri like? God, ninth or 10th on the outfield depth chart? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not going to play this year. He's not going to play probably next year in the major leagues, best case scenario. So now we'll answer the rest of Steven's question in a moment, but Sal Romano is the other part I want to talk about. And I'm like you, you know, these things happen, and I can't disagree with Cincinnati's decision to designate Sal Romano for assignment. But of the two, he's the one that I wish they could have figured out a way to keep him around. Mostly, not that he's been great or anything, and he never has been, but he still has a live arm. Yeah, he's going to be 26, I guess, this season, out of options as well. He was a guy that I thought might fight for the Robert Stevenson Memorial spot in the bullpen, no option spot in the bullpen this year, just because he has such a big arm. But what are you going to do? I mean, you know, you can't keep everyone. And do you lend any credence to Stevens? You know, this is the final purge of the failed Walt Jocketty led rebuild.
No, what is that? And are we going to purge Luis Castillo? Wasn't he part of that too?
It sounds like a plot for a really bad horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is all of the decisions now have been made on that crop of starters, that many of whom turned into relievers, but that came along, and a lot of them didn't pan out. I think in other circumstances, I think Sal would be kept around because of the arm. I think that he's got potential. I'm sure that he will latch on with somebody. He's not seen the last of his big league time. I'm 100% certain about that.
I agree.
But it's just a matter of, there are a lot of guys fighting for that out of options Robert Stevenson Memorial bullpen spot, and you can only have so many people.
Exactly. You know, Romano, it's not like when we talk about the failed rebuild, and I think that it was 90% failed. But I'm not sure you can include Romano in the moves that were made for the rebuild. I mean, he was a 23rd round draft pick, you know, mm-hmm. and he made it to the big league. So that's actually a success of the drafting philosophy, if you want to look at it that way.
Standing is, he was drafted so low because people weren't sure that he would be signed.
Right.
He got a second or third round style draft bonus, I believe.
Exactly. But I'm saying you have to sort of count that as a success of the, rebuild, because they got a guy that late that has that kind of talent, and he did get to the big leagues. You know, if you got a signing bonus in line with a second or third rounder, then, you know, how many second or third rounders actually make it to the big leagues? You know, not all of them, certainly. So,
you know, that's definitely a fair point.
Yeah. So, anyway, I hate to see him go. I wish the Reds could have figured out a way to keep him around, but, you know, good luck to him, because he does still have a live arm. And I'm like you, he will end up somewhere. I could see him latching on somewhere and at least being in a bullpen all season long this year for someone. I mean, he's got that kind of talent. So I don't know.
I still wouldn't be surprised, frankly, to see him catch on as a starter somewhere. I think he was shifted to the bullpen more out of necessity than anything else for the Reds.
Yeah, I could see him being like a fifth guy starter or a sort of swing guy for somebody. Absolutely. You know, if some team needs a fifth starter, they could do worse than Sal Romano, frankly. So, and I hope he does, as long as it's not in the National League Central. Other news of the week, Marcell Ozuna, you remember him?
I do remember him.
The report, you know, he signed with the Atlanta Braves for a one-year deal, I think worth $18 million, if I remember correctly. And there's some news. We heard at the time that Cincinnati was one of the teams that were offering him a multi-year deal. And according to John Heyman, and I say it every time we mention his name, take it with a grain of salt. But according to John Heyman, the Reds offered him a three-year deal for $50 million. Now, you remember, this was before the Castellanos signing. So they made a pretty strong, seems to me anyway, a pretty strong pitch to Ozuna. And he chose, I guess, bet on himself on a one-year deal, hoping to get a better contract next year. Would you prefer Ozuna to Castellanos?
No, I would prefer Castellanos to Ozuna.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on it, and maybe it's just because Castellanos wears a red uniform now, but he's younger. He's got so much upside in terms of his power moving away from Detroit and away from some of the bigger ballpark he's played in, to play 81 of his games at Great American Ballpark. He's healthy. He's had 1 year where he didn't play basically every game, whereas Ozuna, you know, has had the shoulder issue. So, I don't know. I like Ozuna. I feel like if Ozuna's healthy, he's got a chance of being a pretty good player. I don't mind the Reds pursuing a guy like that. But I think probably Castellanos is a better bet for the next 3 years or 4 years, presuming you can keep Castellanos for that long.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think he's the better bet overall. A little bit younger too, I believe, isn't he?
He's younger, yeah. But here's the question I have though, for you: the Reds could still get Ozuna, actually, because what if Castellanos opts out after this year? Did you find the contract situation interesting with Castellanos? My take on it was, it looked like a pretty creative way to get an impact free agent in here, and you know that the Reds may have had to give a little bit to be a little creative to get him to, in here. We'll give him that the opt-out clauses. You have any thoughts on the contract?
I think it's interesting with the opt-outs. It's kind of, it gets him at maybe a little bit of a bargain for this season. But then, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because if the Reds are really good, is he going to opt out? Even if he has a good year? I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, it also is one of those deals where if, say, he has a down year, the Reds can easily talk themselves into still wanting him around because he's young enough that you assume that a down year is going to be just that, a down year, instead of establishing sort of a new norm for him like it might be the case if he were in his 30s.
Yeah, I think that Chris Garber made the comment that I really agree with here, which is for him to opt out after 1 year, he has to have had a monster year. And hey, that's pretty good for the 2020 Reds, you know?
Yeah.
That's not bad. I'll take that. And if the Reds have to, you know, take that money they were going to give to him and go somewhere else afterwards, well, okay, we'll do that. But at least you've gotten one great year at a pretty reasonable price out of right field. So I'm all for it. The more I think about the Castellanos signing, the more I like it. What other news? The USA Today, this is evidently one of these, they call them newspapers. And some of you will remember those.
I remember those, Chad.
I remember them fondly. Can I tell you about a newspaper story?
Tell me about a newspaper story.
When last week, or maybe it's been 2 weeks ago, someone that's related to my in-laws, I'm not sure exactly who it was, they purchased a building in a town next to ours, and that building evidently formerly housed a warehouse for the local newspaper here. And somehow, through some series of, I don't know how it came into their hands, but they found a supplement from the newspaper during my senior year of high school where they had like a preview of the local high school basketball season.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Great picture of me wearing my short shorts. Oh, it was great. It's fantastic. Had a picture of my brother.
We need to get that online.
I may. I have it. Had my brother, bless his heart, he's younger than me, and he was, I guess, probably a sophomore that year, and they had his picture is his first year on the varsity team, and they put somebody else's name under it, and so we've been laughing at him this week.
Yeah,
my poor brother. So anyway, that's my newspaper story for the week. Wasn't that exciting? Was that the definition of scintillating?
That was scintillating. Podcast content.
Podcast gold. Well, this newspaper called the USA Today has evidently come up with their predictions. I don't know how they did it, but predictions for how the 2020 season will play out. And they had the Reds at 85-77 and in the wild card. It's one of the wild card spots. So 85-77 and a wild card. That actually sounds fairly reasonable to me. I could see them doing better than that. I could see them doing worse than that. But that sounds pretty reasonable, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I saw that too. And the thing that struck me as odd about it, and I think that this is one of those things that everybody should be aware of and needs to be thought about, is that it had the Reds and the Cardinals and the Brewers kind of closely sandwiched together. And I think everyone is overrating the Brewers and underrating the Cubs. They're looking at those win totals from last year, and they're not looking at the run differentials. And I think that the Brewers are not a concern because the Brewers have not gotten better at all.
Yeah, I don't see it.
And I think that the Cubs, while they haven't necessarily gotten better, haven't really gotten worse either.
And they still have some upside, seems to me, because they've got some really talented guys that if they come together, you know, they could really be the Cubs again. Yeah.
I mean, the Cubs were on track to hit the playoffs, and then they just fell on their faces at the end of the season last year. Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love to watch that happen?
So good.
But I'm telling everybody out there, the Brewers are not who you need to be concerned about. You need to be concerned about the Cubs and the Cardinals.
I look at that Brewers roster and I see, you know, Yelich, and I don't know. I'm not that enthused about it. And they've really not gotten better either.
That's about it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah.
Go Reds. That's my opinion. Go Reds. Now the.
Fun to play the Pirates 18 times this year.
Oh, man, that's going to be great. Pirates minus Clint Hurdle. So, the topic of the podcast today, time to get into our main topic, which is it's time for some predictions, Jason. Well, let me see how you want to do. You want to do predictions or you want to do best case scenario? My suggestion is we want to predict the opening day roster. Spring training is getting ready to start. Pitchers and catchers are about to report. And I thought it'd be fun for us to go through and – tried to predict the opening day roster. Now, my question for you is, should we do a prediction of who's going to be on the opening day roster? Or should we amend that somehow to reflect the fact that Eugenio Suarez may not be back?
Well, I think we can have a who's the last guy if Suarez is back.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Kind of scenario. I mean, that's what seems logical to me.
So now the rosters this year are 26 players, and only 13 can be pitchers. Only 13 pitchers. How is anyone going to survive with only 13 pitchers, Jason Lindley?
I don't know. It's only 13 pitchers. I mean, they're going to have to pitch more than half an inning each on average every day.
Outrageous. It's completely outrageous. Whew. Rob Manfred is ruining baseball. That actually may be true, but not for that reason.
Days of, you know, reading about those baseball history books where, you know, and even back in the olden days when rosters were thin, anyway, they would still take 16 or 17 pitchers to finish one game is how I understand it.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works. Yeah. So let's go position by position right now, and let's try to see who are locks right now. We'll count them up, okay?
So all right.
We'll start at catcher. It seems to me there are two locks at catcher. Am I right?
I agree. Yeah, Tucker and Kirk Casale are both locks at catcher.
Tucker Barnhart, Kirk Casale. Now, the sort of wild card here. This is if we were doing a who's on your dream roster. I have Tyler Stevenson on the opening day roster. I think the chances of that are pretty slim.
I mean, what did he do? Hit 800 in spring training?
I think what he has to do is pull a Nancy Kerrigan on or a Tonya Harding on Kirk Casale's knee. Even then, I'm not sure it's enough.
Yeah, I'm not either. He hasn't played a game at AAA yet. I'm hoping they'll start him at AAA, so I'll get to see him a little bit. But yeah.
Yeah, I fully expect him to start at AAA, but I'm hopeful that he performs there, is healthy, because 2021, he could be your primary starting catcher in Cincinnati, or at least sharing time with, you'd think, Tucker Barnhart. So two locks there. First base. Any locks at first base?
One Joseph Daniel Votto.
You think he's a lock?
I think he's a lock, Chad. I really do.
They only owe him $107 million left. I think they'll probably designate him for assignment.
Oh, well, we'll see. You might be right.
The question is, who's Joey Votto going to be this year? And I really think that is, again, that's something that we've discussed before, but I think that's going to play a big part in whether the Reds are that 84-85 win team or whether they can be a 90-plus win team. If Votto, he's not going to be the Votto of old, but if he can really improve his performance and maybe just even be the guy from not last year but the year before that led the league in on-base percentage.
Yeah, I think you feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think that it makes this team a lot better. So, all right, so first base, your lock is Joey Votto. Second base, it's Moustakas, the Moose. Is this the point in the podcast where I interject the theme song for Northern Exposure, that old show?
I think it is, yes. Excellent reference.
If you're not old enough to get that, then just, you know, hang up now. Or I don't know how you listen to this. You listen to it on a phone? Do you hang up if you're listening to a podcast on a phone?
Log off, perhaps.
Perhaps. No, don't do that. Stick around. Yeah, Moustakas, I don't think anyone else that you would classify as a second baseman necessarily as a lock right now. Would you think?
No. Yeah, nobody else.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the bench guys, and maybe Van Meter ends up being a guy that we put on the roster, but we're just going with the locks right now around the diamond. Shortstop, Freddie Galvis, I mean, you know, at this point, yep. He's...
And it sounds like that's the way that we're going to go.
And he's the only shortstop in the organization, evidently. Now, third base. Let's presume for now that Eugenio Suarez is back for opening day. I don't know that there's a whole lot of hope for that. But let's presume that he is. Is Eugenio Suarez a lock for the opening day roster if he's healthy? You're not going to answer? You afraid to go on the record on this one?
Of course, Chadwick.
Okay, all right. Yeah, you're probably right. He hit 7 trillion home runs last year. So
that is the precise number of home runs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. So now outfield, who are our locks in the outfield?
Now this is where it gets a little bit complicated, isn't it?
It does, indeed.
So I think, I mean, the obvious ones are Winker, Senzel, Castellanos, and Akiyama. And I also think that Irvin is more or less a lock.
Really?
Yeah, because he's out of options. Unless he gets traded, I think he's a lock.
Yeah. All right, so Castellanos, Shogo Akiyama, Nick Senzel, Jesse Winker. Again, yep. Obviously we're presuming a lot of health. I think those four are locks, yes. You want to put Irvin in the lock category.
I think unless he's traded, because he'd have to be DFA'd, and if he gets DFA'd, he's getting claimed right away.
Which means that Aquino's not going to make it. If Irvin's a lock, then Aquino has no chance.
This is what I think happens. I think that Irvin, assuming everyone's healthy, Irvin starts the year on the team, and Aquino starts the year in Louisville. But Aquino is going to be the first person up the second somebody gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's going to get whatever playing time that person were to get. So say if Jesse Winker goes down, then Aquino is going to get Winker's playing time. Irvin is not. I think Irvin is going to be the fifth outfielder all year long.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you there. So I'm going to leave Irvin off the lock list since we're not agreed on it just yet. We'll discuss him in a moment when we talk about the backups. You could be right. I want to like Philip Irvin more than I do. He seems like a really nice guy.
I'm not arguing that he's a gangbuster player. He just hits left-handers and is out of options and really hits left-handers. And Jesse Winker really doesn't. And yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's. That gives us 10 locks for the 8 position players.
All right.
So let's go with that, and we'll leave Irvin off for just a moment to see who else we have here. Starting pitchers, locks. Luis Castillo, yes.
Yes.
Sonny Gray, yes.
Yep.
Trevor Bauer, yes.
Yep.
Wade Miley.
Yep.
Anthony DeSclafani.
Yep.
And again, presuming health, and you can never do that with pitchers especially. So, I mean, I think that's your starting rotation. I think it's almost a dead lock right now. I don't think there's any way that changes without injury. Do you?
No, not at all. And Tyler O'Malley at number 6 is pretty good.
Right. Yeah. No. Gosh. Absolutely. You know. I like that. And if somebody gets hurt and Tyler O'Malley has to be in the rotation, darn. You know. I mean, we hope that doesn't happen. We want everybody to be healthy. But so I think right now that's probably the most set, you know, area on the team maybe, because the other maybe catcher, I guess, and shortstop are probably set. Everywhere else, you kind of could see things happening. Either injury causing Moustakas to move to third, things like that. We'll talk about that. Relievers now. I'm going to give you some relievers, and I'm going to ask you to say whether you think they are an absolute lock at this point. We're up to 15 players that are locks for the roster.
Lay it on.
All right. Raisel Iglesias.
Lock.
Amir Garrett.
Lock.
Michael Lorenzen.
Lock.
Pedro Strop.
Lock.
Robert Stevenson.
Lock, barring trade.
All right, that gives us 10 pitchers. Lucas Sims.
Lock, barring trade or injury.
A lock, really, for Sims?
Yeah, he's out of options and he can throw.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go with lock on him as well. Because I definitely want to hang on to that guy. He's got an arm. Yeah. So that gives us 6 locks for the bullpen. So essentially we're down to the last 2. So the question are, who are those last 2?
Well, one of them's Cody Reed, unless he gets traded.
You and I are in agreement that Cody Reed is on the roster. So we're gonna add him. Because I think he is actually the Robert Stevenson Memorial. I don't have any options bullpen arm this year. And I like it. We've been fans of Cody Reed for a long time. He's got crazy upside.
And yeah.
So that leaves us essentially 1 bullpen spot. Who do we give it to?
My guess right now, and I mean there is going to be competition, but my guess is Nate Jones, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There are 4 or 5 guys that it could be. There's was it Jose De Leon?
Yeah.
You know, Joel, there are a couple of possibilities, but I think Nate Jones is probably has the inside track.
I could see Joel Kuhnel. I could see Matt Bowman. Mm-hmm. Tyler Thornburg.
Yeah.
I think we're going to go on the record here with our prediction for the roster, and we got to say who has the inside spot on that last one. I think I'm probably inclined to go with you on Nate Jones because I don't really have any feeling about any of these guys having much of an edge. Jones is an interesting looking arm that could help this team.
And he's a non-roster guy. I kind of feel like if, you know, he's coming off some injury, he has to show up, and if it looks like he's got something left, then he's good to go. And if not, if he doesn't have anything left, then he'll be cut pretty quick, I think.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah. Let's go.
The other guys, everybody else that you mentioned, I agree, and I'm sure they'll see time on the Reds at some point. But it's more a matter of breaking camp, and they have options. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're going to go with Jones then. I can deal with that. That puts us up to 23, so we have three roster spots remaining. So we're going to need a backup outfielder.
That's going to take a while to get used to, by the way. I'm like, oh, wow, only two spots? And you're like, no, it's three.
We're going to need a backup outfielder, and we're going to need somebody to back up Freddy Galvis. That's two of those three spots. You want to give one of the backup outfielders to Philip Irvin. Kyle Farmer probably has to have a spot, right?
Kyle Farmer is a lock. He's a lock on the bench.
Okay, so we're going to add Kyle Farmer. We're up to 24 now.
Yeah.
So here are the guys that are in competition for that last spot, I guess, or last two spots. You have Phil Irvin. You have Aristides Aquino. You have Josh Van Meter. You have Alex Blandino. Aren't those, wouldn't you say those are the top four possibilities for these last two spots?
I would, yes. And I think that... Blandino, does Blandino have options left?
This I don't know.
I would put Blandino just about last on that depth chart.
I would too, but he can play a little shortstop.
He can, but I mean, so can Farmer, right? I mean,
yeah, a little is the operative term.
In theory.
Yeah.
Blandino still has two options left. Wow, okay.
So he's probably, well, Van Meter's got options as well. So,
yeah,
I mean, it could be, it may come down to who they feel like gives them more flexibility around the infield. Of course, Van Meter can play outfield as well, but I'm not sure that's necessarily going to be an issue.
If this team doesn't need one thing right now, it's outfield or flexibility.
That's true. What I could see happening is, I think if we're making an actual prediction of what's going to happen, I think you're going to be right about the outfield. I think Irvin gets that spot because of the options. And Aquino goes down. I think the team's probably slightly better with Aquino rather than Irvin, but it's not enough to move the needle. You know, we're talking about the 25th guy on the roster.
Yeah, and it's also a matter of kind of planning for the whole season and realizing that probably, you know, God, one of those 7,000 outfielders is going to get hurt at some point, you know. And who would you rather than have as your next option?
Yeah.
You know, and you're not going to get you're not going to be allowed to have Irvin as the next option because the team will claim him.
Right. So let's go with Irvin. That makes a lock. That's 25. And so who's the last man on the roster? I think it's probably Josh Van Meter. My opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it's either Van Meter or Blandino. You know, you're right about the shortstop factor there.
Which way do you see him going?
I still wouldn't be surprised if there were some kind of little trade worked or something along those lines. You know, not anything probably huge. But maybe outfield surplus traded for infield surplus, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, Philip Irvin is a guy that, you know, you could see maybe for a backup shortstop or backup infielder or something like that.
Yeah.
For a Freddy Galvis type, you know, just to get some depth. I don't know. I think if we're going from the players we have right now, I think I'm going to say Van Meter to give us 26. Are you in or out on that one?
I'd probably go with you, but if you ask me tomorrow, I might say Blandino. Yeah, but again, last guy on the roster, so.
Yeah, and I don't have any heartache whichever way they go. I like both those guys in that role. Now, the question is, Eugenio Suarez is not ready for opening day. And I have my opinion on what will happen in those circumstances in terms of the roster shenanigans that have to go on. Do you want you mean to give you my thoughts, or do you want to go ahead and weigh in?
I would like to weigh in first.
Go right ahead.
I've been waiting for a podcasting opportunity to say something about this. this.
Excellent. I want to hear it.
Because some folks on Twitter are real worked up, and they've determined for themselves already that Suarez is like down for the count, right?
Wait, like for the year?
For months and months.
Oh, come on.
Like, and I think this is nonsense. And the reason I think it's nonsense is this. If the Reds believed it was even a slight possibility that he would miss significant time, then they would be talking about Nick Senzel at second base and Mike Moustakas at third. But there hasn't been any indication, unless I've missed something. In fact, they've gone out of their way to say that Nick Senzel is an outfielder, which tells me that Suarez is expected to miss very little, if any time at all, and makes me believe that this really was a very minor injury that just kind of had bad timing. And I think that what's most likely to happen in that circumstance is you'll have Van Meter or Moustakas or whoever playing, you know, third, or, you know, those guys will shuffle around a bit, second and third, and it'll work itself out. Or even Castellanos can play. He came up as a third baseman. So you can figure something out there, it seems to me. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I think it's going to happen, if it has to, for something on the order of a week to 10 days.
So who gets the roster spot? Blandino?
Probably Blandino. Yeah, Blandino can play third.
Okay. I disagree with some of what you say. I don't think it's a serious. I don't think there's any indication that it's serious. It could be. Maybe they're hiding it from us. I don't think by any of the Reds' actions that there's evidence that it's more serious than what they say. He had a cannonball that went wrong in the pool. And what are you going to do? It happens. Happens to the best of us, J-Man. But what I think, Senzel will see time at second base. I think what you haven't seen much about it, and I think part of the reason for that is Dick Williams actually said something this past week that we felt like we owed it to Nick Senzel to let him have a position to focus on. He's played four different positions in four different springs for the Reds. Yeah. And they felt like it was important to let him know, you know, you're going to be an outfielder. And Senzel has said that he was looking forward to being able to go and know what he was going to be working on, know what he had to do going into the season. David Bell did make a comment in the wake of the Nick Castellanos signing that he could see Senzel getting time at second base. I think what's going to happen is Aristides Aquino is going to make the opening day roster if Suarez is not already, and Senzel is going to get the bulk of the second base at-bats, and Moustakas is going to shift over third until he's back. I think it's a short-term thing, but I think they're going to want to keep Senzel's they're going to have use him flexibly. Is that a word? Flexibly?
Yes.
Because they got so many outfielders, and he has value around the diamond. So
that's the best lineup for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to hide what you lose offensively with Suarez being gone. You know, plugging Kyle Farmer in at second base, or plugging, you know, Blandino in at third or whatever. Ugh, you know, I mean, it's okay for a short period of time if we're talking a week to 10 days that we can live with it. But if it's, you know, if it's 2 weeks, if it's 3 weeks, if it's a month, I would be very surprised if it's more than a month. But
I think it'll be a month.
No, I don't either. I don't see any indication of that. But I really kind of expect them to go with Senzel at second and move Moustakas over. We'll see.
Okay, well, you know, you kind of might have convinced me.
We may find out early in spring training when we start seeing or early after the hitters report. Of course, Senzel's been out there for months in Arizona.
Yeah. Well, and Suarez isn't really expected to be that far behind either. So we might find out just kind of like when how quickly he starts to get into games will tell us things too.
Yeah. I expect him to play in spring training games, and so he may not be that far behind. It may just be a matter of a week. Keep him out in Arizona for a week. Let him just get stronger and work more on the things he needs to do to get ready to play. So, I don't know. At least they have options this year, you know?
Isn't it nice when it's like, oh, my God, one player is injured, the season is over, that's not the thing anymore?
I mean, I still worry about their depth, but they do have some more depth than they've had in years, and so that's better. You want to answer a few viewer mail questions?
I always, always, always want to answer listener mail questions, Chad.
Something sounded weird about the way you said that, but we'll power
See,
through it.
I think I've let things go sometimes because I don't bring them up every time. I haven't let it go. I will never let anything go.
I've noticed that. These questions come from patreon.com/redlegradio, where you too can support us and get your viewer mail questions answered. Get priority on that if you want. Also, join us on our crazy Slack channel where people talk about all kinds of crazy stuff all day long. And, you know, sort of hang out with the patron that's on the pirate ship. Mike Mannix has the first question. You remember that show, Mannix?
Mannix? That's a name right there.
Oh, man, it's fantastic. His question is, does your viewer mail arrive in stacks or sacks?
Well, you're the address that it all goes to, Chad, so I think that this question goes to you.
As always, these are actual letters from actual viewers.
There we go. It's
the Red Leg Nation mailbag. Joe Farsing asks, better Fry, Lonnie, Glenn, or French? Lonnie Fry, Glenn Fry, or French Fry? Now, do you have any, you're a music guy. I want to know your thoughts on Glenn Fry. What?
You can quote me on that.
Let me tell you what I have to say about it. I hate the blinking Eagles. Oh, no, that was the Big Lebowski that hates the Eagles.
The Eagles are fine.
Oh, they're garbage.
Yeah, they're fine.
They're not really garbage, but I like,
Yeah.
Picking at that particular, some people get mad when you say stuff like that. Now French Fry, obviously that's a strong choice.
It's a very strong choice.
You know, but now I got to ask this though. Do we still have French fries or are they still Freedom fries?
I think they've been French fries again for a while.
Oh, I didn't know if that legislation had expired. Lonnie Fry, I'm going with Lonnie Fry on this. Lonnie Fry, an underrated Cincinnati Red, argument for being certainly at least the top three second baseman in Reds history. Are you a fan of the Lonnie Fry?
Wait, a top three?
Don't you think top three?
Are you dishonoring Scooter Jeanette? Hashtag Chad hates Scooter.
Oh, here we go.
Everybody, Chad hates Scooter.
Hash brown, Chad hates Scooter. I'm going to say Scooter's number four in honor of his four home runs in one game. Lonnie Fry is probably your number three second baseman in Reds history to me.
I think that's probably about right.
Behind Joe Morgan and the legend himself, Brandon Phillips. You know, he had how many years? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years in Cincinnati. 3 All-Star games. He was a really solid player for the Reds. Back-to-back seasons of right at 6 wins above replacement. He was good. So I'm going with Lonnie Fry. You're going with Glenn Fry.
No, I'm going with either Lonnie Fry or French Fry.
Well, you got to make a choice here, man. You can't
need French Fry, man.
French Fry. It's a solid choice. I can't really argue with you on it. Andrew Scott Wills asks, will there ever be a day when the Reds make a move to avoid the luxury tax? Hash brown, doer mail. Something's wrong with the world. The Boston Red Sox are trying to cut payroll to avoid the luxury tax. They can't afford to re-sign Mookie Betts, and yet the Reds are, again, the Reds are right in the neighborhood of an average payroll. It's not like they're breaking the bank, but they're at least spending this offseason in contrast to many other teams. What do you think about this nonsense with the Red Sox?
Well, let's be clear. The Red Sox can afford to sign Mookie Betts. They just don't want to.
That's not what I've been reported by your local beat reporter or your local national reporter from theathletic.com. Not one of the local Reds guys, but there's a guy over there that keeps reporting. His initials are Ken Rosenthal, that they don't have the financial flexibility to be able to keep Mookie Betts. And isn't it awful?
Yeah, okay. The team is worth $3.2 billion.
Their ownership group owns Liverpool. I mean, this is one of the, they print money. Liverpool does.
Yes.
And the Red Sox print money.
Yeah, it's nonsense. and, if the Reds ever make a move to avoid the luxury tax, saying they can't afford something, I will say to them the same thing I would say to the Red Sox. Let me see your books, and then I'll believe you.
Yeah, although the flip side is I kind of hope there is a day when the Reds make a move to avoid the luxury tax, because then that means our payroll is way higher than it is now. So
yeah,
at least,
that would be nice. Yeah,
that's a silver lining, I guess. The corollary, if this Betts trade ended up going through, you know, I hate the Dodgers. I just have an instinctive reaction to want to hate the Dodgers. That team really wants to win a World Series. You know, they keep getting close, but, you know, they are trying everything they can to win. They're probably trying harder than any team in the majors to win a World Series, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, yes.
Isn't it sad that that's not the Reds?
Well, the Reds are probably – the Reds are coming in maybe a strong second on that, don't you think?
Nah, the Reds aren't trying at all. They're lazy. That's just it. They just can't, you know, bring themselves to try to do anything. I don't even know what that means. I mean, I've lost my mind. I don't even know how to evaluate baseball anymore when the Red Sox are cutting payroll and the Reds are actively trying to add payroll. The Reds have signed real free agents this year, not just, you know, a couple of relievers.
Well, what is it? Isn't it like – I mean, it's remarkable, isn't it?
It's. Yeah, I still don't even know how to – yeah, I can't even
analyze it. Like, this season is three of the top four free agent contracts in Reds history, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely insane.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know how to, it's like a whole new world that we're having to get adjusted to.
It truly is. It truly is.
So the next question comes from our friend Joe Farsing at patreon.com/redlegradio. He likes asking questions. I think he just likes to hear his name said. But this is a good question. It's something that I've had a discussion with some people about. How much ineptitude is worth a world title? The Marlins have two championships, but have been unconscionably awful for the other 21 years of existence. Basically, if the Reds were to win this year, it would be worth a decade of mediocrity, 15 years of mediocrity. You know, we've seen 3 decades of mostly bad baseball here in Cincinnati, with a couple of you know, bumps in the graph. I don't know. The answer is yes, probably, to me. 2 championships? That's amazing. You know, but man, they're so embarrassing, the Marlins are, every other year. That'd be tough. Yeah.
This is what I think, and I have complicated feelings about it, but really what it comes down to is my belief that it's never okay to lose on purpose. I've gotten over the whole tanking thing. I've come to the opinion that the tanking is really just an excuse for ownership to hoard profits for a few years. And I'm just over it. And I, you know, I could put up with several bad years if it was a matter of I knew they were trying and things just weren't going that way. But I don't want none of this stuff where the teams tank and lose 104 games or whatever. None of that. No.
I'm to the point where, you know, baseball is a diversion for me, and we spend more time talking about it and thinking about it than most people do. But I just want to be entertained. And yeah, if I knew the Reds were never going to win a championship for the rest of my life, and there's a pretty good chance that's going to be the case, but if I knew that for a fact, but they were going to be, you know, competitive, or at least trying to be competitive every year the rest of my life, I'd probably take it. You know, they're in the mix. It's fun to watch a team that's you know, a better than average team, and maybe has a chance to make the playoffs, and maybe does make the playoffs sometimes, and sometimes they don't. I don't know. I think I would prefer that to, you know, 2 championships and being the Marlins the rest of the time.
You know, it's also worth noting, and I think this is something that sports fans in general forget too much, and we'll just use baseball because that's, you know, we're a baseball podcast. But there are 30 teams. That means on average your team is supposed to win the World Series once every 30 years.
So this is our year then.
It's been 30 years. But I mean, you see my point though, right?
Right.
Like, you know, everybody can't win all the time. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
I'm kind of like you. I just want to see them trying to win. I want to see them trying to win. And if it goes our way, then great. It goes our way.
Yeah, there's so many things that can happen. But if you're in the mix all season long, basically, you get a chance. It's fun to watch. It's fun to follow. And if you fall short, oh well. Yeah, we'll get them next year. But, I don't want to be the Marlins. Dennis Papasan asks, I'm 57 and have lived in Texas all my life. I'm a lifelong Reds fan and can't imagine rooting for another team. If the Cincinnati Reds had never existed, what team do you believe you would have latched onto and why? And this is different from the question we get every once in a while of, you know, who's your second favorite team or who's your favorite American League team or something like that. If the Cincinnati Reds had never existed, what team do you believe you would have latched on to and why? For me, a pretty easy answer, I think. It probably would have been the Atlanta Braves because, you know, growing up, TBS had all the Braves games on, and that's about the only place to watch baseball most of the time. And my brother got lured into that. One of my three brothers did. The others are Reds fans, but one of them, the one whose name was wrong in the newspaper, is a Braves fan. And I think I probably would have been a Braves fan, and that would have been really sad to get up every morning and look in the mirror and realize that I was a fan of the Atlanta Braves.
Listen, it gets worse.
Oh, no. Let's hear it.
Because where I live, it's the Reds AAA team now.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know where you're going.
For a long time, it was the Cardinals AAA team.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Cardinals fans around here, and the Cardinals are the closest major league team to me that's not Cincinnati. So I don't see how there's any way I avoid becoming a Cardinals fan.
Oh, boy, I would have ended up way better than you.
There, but for the grace of God, go I, Chad.
But you know what? We'd have been celebrating some competitive teams over the last, 25 years.
It's true.
We'd have a lot more fun, probably.
We have Stockholm Syndrome, Chad.
I think so. Why do the Reds exist? Mike Hart asks, could the Reds not have made a better offer for Mookie Betts? That seems like a steal for the Dodgers. That was my thought, was that the Reds couldn't have ponied up for that. And maybe they would have. Maybe, I don't know, I think they should have anyway if they could have. But didn't it seem like the Red Sox just handed him away for a fairly light return? I mean, the Dodgers didn't have to give up anybody, really.
Yeah,
any of their guys they were really counting on, any of their top guys.
But they did have to agree to take on what, something like $40 million in payroll, right?
They did. But you know,
so that's a thing where the Reds just weren't going to do that.
That's true. So the Reds could have made a better offer, player wise, but. Yeah, because the Red Sox, bless their hearts, they're poor. They had to cut payroll. God, idiots. I hate that. You know, I've hated the Red Sox for as long as I could have lived, and I'm hating them even worse now. And, you know, I watched that Super Bowl the other night, and they had this commercial with all these guys doing the Boston accent. I'm like, they're probably Red Sox fans. So I'm not going to buy whatever car was being advertised in that advertisement because it's Boston. I'm anti-Boston. This podcast is now officially anti-Boston. Can you sign on to that?
I can sign on to that, yes.
Okay, there we go then.
I'm in.
The Real Todd Father asks, other than a lack of infield depth, what, if any, other weaknesses do you see on our 2020 Red Legs? I think we kind of talked about earlier, potentially the bullpen, but I could also see the bullpen coming together really nicely. I think everybody's got a weakness in the bullpen around baseball, as far as I can tell.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I think everybody knows my stance, but it always bears repeating, which is that I don't believe in relief pitchers at all, and I think you can flip a coin as to and do as good a job figuring out who has the best bullpen in baseball this year as you can by looking at stats.
Yeah, the Reds have enough arms out there that are, nice to look at, that you could absolutely see this group being a fantastic bullpen. But you could see them because you don't know. You just don't know. You're right, Jason.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's just lack of infield depth, which is a problem a lot of teams have. You know, the Reds' two weakest positions are probably catcher and shortstop, and those are the two weakest positions on most teams.
Yeah. Before the winter began, just after last season, we talked on the podcast about where the Reds had to upgrade, and of course we thought outfield. I mean, really, my opinion was if they started the season with Aristides Aquino as your presumptive starter in right field, you've probably not improved your team enough. But the two positions that most people identified were catcher and shortstop, and the Reds did not improve at catcher and shortstop at all, and yet still I'm pretty happy with what they were able to do. You know, I wouldn't have seen that coming, I guess, is the way what I would say.
And you know, I was encouraged also, I will say, and I think I said this on the podcast before, but the better fielding metrics that we got this year through the release of outs above average for infielders really put Freddie Galvis in a nice light. And it made me really wonder if maybe the Reds knew something defensively there that we did not know. And it really put Didi Gregorius in a poor light, and it made me wonder the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't believe that I'm saying that the Reds did not improve or start the season with Galvis as their shortstop. I said before, if Galvis is your shortstop, we got problems. And now I've talked myself into believing, well, they improved so much everywhere else. you know, Galvis, he's got some pop and defensively pretty good. We can live with him. He's not my ideal choice for a shortstop, but I guess we can live with him.
Yeah, I agree. He's not ideal, but, you know, your options are what they are. And really, I mean, at least so far, no shortstop for all the talk of all the shortstops who are on the market. And that's really what we were focusing on, was acquiring through trade, because yeah. Didi was the only one on the free agent market you'd even think about. Nobody's moved.
Yep.
You know?
So it could be a case where that could still happen around the trade deadline or something.
Yeah, but at this point, you can't even say, well, the Reds should have just made a better offer. It's no trades have happened.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, again, that's the Reds may be waiting to see if they can still upgrade that position sometime mid-season. But as of now, it looks like that's where we are. And, okay, I'm all right with it. Woo the Reds asks. Jason, you like to say woo the Reds?
Some people do. Sometimes I do.
If Tyler Stevenson, we were at a high school basketball game the other day. A friend of mine and I, we for some reason broadcast our local high school basketball games. They asked us to do it, and so we're goofing around with it. And the guy that I broadcast with, he said he was going to start the woo at this high school basketball game. And I told him that would be an exceptionally bad idea. So I dislike the woo in all its forms. Not true.
Including in the woo the Reds form?
I love the woo the Reds form. I love the woo that's actually happening at the game. I think do what you want to do. If Tyler Stevenson doesn't start the year in AAA, woo asks, should that end any hope of him being called up any time before the rosters are expanded? Would that be the Reds signaling that 2021 is the earliest he should be expected to help the major league club? Yeah, I think if he starts at Double A, I think that he's not going to be here anytime next year, certainly. But I don't think he's going to start at Double A.
I think he's going to start at Triple A. But I will say that if he starts at Double A, I don't think it necessarily rules anything out. Because last year, you know, it could be a circumstance where he gets half a season at Double A. Half a season at AAA, and then, you know, when the Louisville season ends, which is basically when rosters expand, he could still get called up. It just depends on how he hits. So we'll see, but I really anticipate that he'll start the season at Louisville.
Yeah, I would be exceptionally surprised if he made it to the big leagues in 2020 if he doesn't start the year at AAA. If he does start the year at AAA, I think there's a pretty good chance that he'd be called up at some point. I mean, I just, you know, he's on the 40-man roster, and if the catchers get hurt, and I could see it happening, presuming that he performs at AAA, which he has not yet. Derek Moser asks, someone with Prospects Live, I'm not sure I know what Prospects Live is. Maybe you do, Jason. Someone with Prospects Live ranked Jose Garcia as the 28th ranked prospect in all of baseball. He finished 100th on the composite list. Who's a prospect that you've had a similarly optimistic outlook on, and were you right? So with respect to similarly optimistic outlook on, maybe a guy that's a prospect, but that we rank higher than everyone else. I think that's the way he's asking that question. It's a tough one. I may go with Tyler Mahle, and I don't know we're right yet or not, but I've been saying for years, I like the fact that he just gets people out.
Tyler Mahle.
Yeah, we've been talking about him for years because he gets people out. He always has, and I'm still high on him. So that's probably the guy for me that I can think of, and whether we're right or not, we'll find out over the next couple of years. Anyone else you can think of?
Well, I think I can claim Amir. I think I was higher on Amir than most people were. I think everybody else was focusing on Stevenson especially, and I thought that either Reed or Amir had a chance at being better than Stevenson. And then, you know, if I'm going to own to being wrong, I would say that at this point we have to say that I was wrong about Jose Peraza.
Yeah, yeah. Although, as the Red Sox get rid of everybody else, it looks like Peraza and Billy Hamilton are in line to get some big at-bats this year for Boston.
Boy, if somebody had told you that 2 or 3 years ago.
I can't think of really anyone else. That'd be a good question. I may have to do some more thinking on that one, but just for current guys. You know, Cody Reed's a guy that I was also really optimistic on, and I still think I could end up being somewhat right on him. I'm not giving up on Cody Reed.
And of course, depending on our definition of prospect, because he had some big league time when the Reds got a hold of him, but I will never stop trumpeting my rightness about Eugenio Suarez. Never, ever, ever.
You like Gino?
I liked him from the start.
I didn't. I disliked him from the start because, you know, you watch him out on the field and he's got such a bad attitude and he never smiles And I just don't like watching players like that. And he wears his hat sideways.
You're fired.
You can't fire me from my own podcast.
Sorry, Chad's mom. He's not allowed on his podcast anymore.
Oh, man. This is the worst. That goes into our final question. Here comes from Rich Thompson. Rich asks, from what I have read about Pedro Strop, he is a quality guy, both on and off the field. And I think there has been plenty of reporting about that. And he's another guy I'm glad to have, even if he wears his hat a little askew. I am also guessing that he might have a lighthearted spirit, much like Eugenio Suarez. With that said, I bet he likes to bring a little fun to the ballpark each game. Therefore, if he does not have a walk-on song from out of the bullpen, I think it would be fun that he consider an adaptation of Billy Squire's song, The Stroke, instead change the title to The Strope, and sing-along chorus lyrics for the fans could be Strope Man, Strope Man, Strope, Strope. Rich, he puts some thought into these questions every single week, and he really put some thought into this one. Question is, do you have any other worthy walk-on songs to consider for Pedro Strope? Fly Me to the Moon? No, that was Todd Frazier. For Chapman back in the day? That's the best one. Chapman's? Somebody's got to tell me. That's the best one for any reliever. I don't have any other words. I'm going to go with Fly Me to the Moon or perhaps I've Got You Under My Skin by Frank Sinatra. Yeah, I don't know.
I'll let you just have that one, Chad.
Oh, you know what I will go with, actually?
What?
Glory Days. Then Strope could throw that speedball by him. Make him look like a fool, man.
You're fired again.
Oh, come on, Jason. You can't fire me from my own podcast. All right, well, I've been fired, so I guess that's a place to stick a pin in this one. You know how to subscribe to the podcast. Everywhere you find your podcast, you can find Red Leg Nation Radio. Be sure to subscribe. Click the, review rating button. Give us good reviews. Tell your friends about us. That's more important. Spread the word about this crazy show that I'm just amazed that more listeners every week, and you guys are just absolutely fantastic. Follow us at redlegnation.com every day. We're at Red Leg Radio on Twitter. Boy, I tell you what, I've done this 309 times, and I still can't get it right, Jason Linden. Red Leg Radio on Twitter. He's at Jason Linden on Twitter. I'm at Dotson C. And Jason, you're just going to have to say something at this point because I'm, I've lost it.
All right. Well, for Chad Dotson and Pedro Strope, this is Jason Linden saying good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from redlegnation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app and join us for discussion of all things Reds at redlegnation.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.